Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschool children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And we'd like to welcome you into Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben this morning. A couple of technical snafus on the way, and Dr. Coben is flying solo this morning at TRN, so bear with us for just a minute as we try to do our best to make the show happen here this morning. At any rate, we have a number of things going on, of course, in the world today, and the Christian worldview is always affected by things that the state does, that governments are doing around the world. We need to know what's happening with that we might think better as Christians, and we're encouraging you to do that today as we start the day with Christian Worldview. A lot of things going on, of course, in Iraq. Does anybody remember the oil for food program, and then also the fact that the government, the Republicans, claimed that this war would be paid for by the Iraqi people through oil sales? Well, that's obviously not going to happen now. They're just going to saddle us with that debt here in America. And also, they seem to have forgotten the main targets of the war on terror. Or did they? Is this truly a war on terror that they want to get Osama bin Laden and the perpetrators of 9/11? Or are they just content to have blasted Iraq and going to continue on their merry way now with their own personal agenda? Seems to be the latter, if you ask me. It looks like a tragedy that just was very avoidable, and yet now we have all sorts of instability in the Middle East, but far more than ever before, and we have a lot of people dead. We have a dictator who's still hanging around court system in the U.S. if he's not already been transferred to the pleasure circuit in Europe to go travel around like Pol Pot did for a number of years. At any rate, it's a sad tale, and I just was reminded of this as I saw this tanker truck burning this morning after insurgents hit a U.S. convoy. This happened on Fox News overnight. Just a lot of things going on around the world. Baghdad was the location of this latest truck convoy attack, by the way. So, at any rate, we are going to try to run the best we can here on the Christian Worldview show, and we are making headway, if possible, into a great day for us here at TRN. Unfortunately, haven't got the weather for you, and I assume it's still going to be a rainy day, but I haven't seen the actual weather, so I'm going to go ahead and try to get that for you in just a minute. In the time being, I want to go ahead and get off to a few interesting stories as they have come up overnight here overnight on the internet. The problem with the tyranny response unit, folks, is he just can't do two things at once. And if I've got to look at all this equipment here and try to remember how these producers do their magic tricks and make the thing work and talk at the same time, it's very difficult. Unfortunately, I can't chew gum and walk at the same time. Pretty sad, I know, but nevertheless, it gives some comedy from my wife, who constantly reminds me of those things. Are women just better at multitasking in general than men are? That may be the case. If you look at the Proverbs 31 woman, it sure seems like she can do a whole lot of things pretty effectively all the time. Not me. I have to have my mind on one thing or another in order to do well, it seems. At any rate, the Libertarian Party sent us up an interesting script or an interesting story this morning from John Monk, who's talking about South Carolina busting tax cheats. Revenue agency's new system expected to bring in millions from non-compliers. South Carolina is cracking down on tax dodgers and deadbeats, employing a sophisticated new computer system to increase tax collections by at least $100 million over the next 5 years. This week, the South Carolina Department of Revenue will implement the first phase of a high-tech system that, like the alien creature in the movie Predator, will hunt down tax welchers and nail them like they've never been nailed before. The computer will send out 1,000 letters this week to suspected non-compliers. In months to come, it will send out up to 3,000 letters a week. It will revolutionize tax collection in South Carolina, said Department of Revenue Director Bernie Maybank. He said non-filers and tax underreporters deprive the state of tens of millions of dollars each year. Maybank's new computer is actually two refrigerator-sized racks with Hewlett-Packard servers and storage device. The assemblage is gleaming black with blinking red lights. Eventually, it will hold more than 300 million records, more personal data about South Carolinians than any computer system anywhere. Isn't that comforting to know that your state government knows that much about you and is able to keep you under the thumb? I bet it's just really a comfort to all of your souls this morning, isn't it, to think about this this new computer system. What a wicked and debauched thing that our government is so, or our state is so involved firsthand with extortion that they go to this length. And of course, they're spending, they're extorting money from you. They're kind of putting it back into the business with a capitalist model. You know, instead of spending all your profits, you just plow it right back into the business. That's what they're doing. They're plowing it back into the business in order to extract more cash from innocent victims out there. Here we have this new computer system being ready to do that. So beware, you're probably going to end up getting some letters from the South, if you live in South Carolina, from the South Carolina Department of Revenue, as they seek to get the so-called non-compliers. Anything else to say on that? This article has a number of things on here. Oh, here you go. Nowhere to hide, it says. Maybank said tens of thousands of South Carolinians either don't file income tax forms or underreport their income. In part, that is because they know there's little chance they will be caught. With out-of-date computers, the state primarily catches only the most obvious tax non-compliers, such as those who fail to report big stock dividend checks, Maybank said. In theory, the state is supposed to match up state and federal tax data, but that doesn't easily happen. The IRS sent its data to South Carolina on reels of tape that were difficult to access. Now the IRS data is loaded into a computer and is instantly retrievable. The new system will also analyze data. And they'll talk about how they can check out and see if you really did get the deduction you claimed and if it really yielded the benefit that you said. At any rate, we have super safeguards also. State tax officials say they're installing high security measures to protect the data. It's not to connect to the internet, so hackers can't get into it. Inside the Revenue Department, only authorized people can access the data. Nice to know. Glad the Libertarian Party is keeping us informed on this latest event. Thank you for sending that story up so we could hear about it. Appreciate it. Well, we have a weather report here. If you're in Greenville this morning, it's 48 degrees, and it's going to be going up to a high of just 60 degrees today with scattered thunderstorms again. Yesterday, I understand we had even a tornado down in Abbeville, which isn't too far away from Greenville. Had last year, too, one that wiped out some stuff in Lawrence County. In fact, it could be that we could actually have an isolated tornado once again today. I'll be looking at, they're talking about actually possibilities for wind damage and large hail, especially from the Abbeville to Hodges to Greenwood to Callison area. Again, that's slightly outside of our listening area, unfortunately, right now. Although I understand that's changing. Got another report from some of our production crew, and they're actually trying to get a Christian Worldview up, and the Tyranny Response Network, I should say, up and more powerful by the weekend. So we'll see. We've been hearing these kinds of reports for a long time. I know, folks, I appreciate your patience in hanging in there with this volunteer staff. But hopefully they'll actually have some progress made, if not the actual thing done by the weekend. They may have some progress toward that end. So stay tuned with us. Well, we have a couple other stories happening here in the news this morning. Fox News is reporting that labs are to destroy a flu strain to avoid an epidemic. We always like talking about the flu shot here on Christian Worldview. Remember, the idea of vaccinating people in and of itself is problematic because some people complain that there's going to be a lot of deaths and extra chaos. There's a lot of poisons in the vaccines and so forth. We've heard listeners who written in and talked about that. I don't know for sure about any of these things if they're true, but there's always a risk, obviously, of infection from taking the vaccine. And that might be only one person in 100,000, or there might be some side effects for another several. Is that better off? Is it better off to have that or to have a widespread epidemic? And that's, of course, the theory is the reason the government does this sort of vaccination programs and things is in order to prevent the widespread flu and other kinds of endemics. Well, at any rate, there is a story today about labs wanting to destroy the flu vaccine or labs to destroy flu strain to avoid an epidemic. This could be part of the reactive policy of government. After all, the role of government, properly defined, is to protect us from predators, and they don't necessarily have to be human predators. Could be a predator of any kind, and here we see that we have the government taking charge and making a call regarding this flu strain. The Associated Press reports, London, thousands of scientists were scrambling Tuesday at the urging of global health authorities to destroy vials of pandemic flu strains sent to labs in all 18 countries as part of routine testing. The rush urged by the World Health Organization was sparked by a slim but real risk that the samples could spark a global flu epidemic. The vials of virus sent by a U.S. company went to nearly 5,000 labs, mostly in the United States, officials say. The risk is relatively low that a lab worker will get sick, but a large number of labs got it. And if someone does get infected, the risk of severe illness is high, and this virus has shown to be fully transmissible. WHO's influenza chief, Klaus Storr, told the Associated Press. It was not immediately clear why the 1957 pandemic strain, which killed between 1 million and 4 million people, was in the proficiency test kits routinely sent to labs. That is an interesting question. Why does government hang around, keep these sorts of these strains alive and well? It doesn't make a whole lot of sense that it would do so, does it? Very, very unusual, to say the least. Well, at any rate, this is something to keep our eyes on, folks. We've got here... the government using these different kinds of viruses in order to test them, in order to help people not get it, and how it's endangering those people who are actually working with it, and might actually cause an endemic, et cetera, or epidemic of a flu outbreak. Let's see. Let me say a little bit more about the test kits down here. So some of the labs outside the United States have already destroyed their samples, he said, and WHO is hoping that the rest of the vials will be destroyed by Friday. The health agency wouldn't name the other countries whose labs received the samples. The test kits are used for internal quality control checks to demonstrate that a lab is able to correctly identify viruses or as a way for labs to get certified by the College of American Pathologists. The kits involve blind samples. The lab then has to correctly identify the pathogen in the vial in order to pass the test. Usually, the influenza virus is included in these kits is one that is currently circulating or is one that has recently been in circulation. So they're constantly testing these people to see if they really know what they're looking at. Well, let's hope so. I mean, you would think that somebody who's had that much training would know what they're looking at, but I guess, what do I know? I've never seen one. If I did see one, I wouldn't know what I was looking at, so maybe they do need to be tested. I know I have a lot of students in the past that have needed to be retested over and again, so especially if they're public school graduates working in these labs, we really have a lot to worry about. In fact, it's even worse if they've been trained with Marxian anthill policy ideals or political philosophy, then they might just go ahead and release some of the stuff to kill off a few people, a few thousand or a few million, in order to rid the world of the dreaded population increase and all this other malarkey that goes on and has taught in public schools these days, or in public universities, or just about anywhere, it seems. In fact, I even understand Christian schools teach that there's an overpopulation problem in the world. What a bunch of nonsense. It's amazing to me how people can fall for this sort of stuff. All they got to do is take a little bit of a drive somewhere, just in America, and find the wide open spaces of vast stretches of areas where people that could still live, and it should be enough to short circuit this whole philosophy. Oh, but we won't have enough food if we put them all out there. Where will we grow our crops? Look, folks, I mean, 1% of all Americans work on farms or in agriculture, and they provide way more food than everyone else needs. In just America, it's basically the case in every other nation as well, but in just America, it works that way. And so, the idea that we would run out of food is just preposterous. See, socialists, they live, and Marxists, and sometimes even the typical Darwinists, they live in a static world. They look at the world as impossible to be any different than it is at the current time. And so they see, well, there's certain amount of food is produced right now, X amount. And although it might go up if you had more people working on farms, if you had a greater population increase, it would only go up arithmetically. It's old Malthusian false doctrine. What they don't realize is that human beings, when they get their back pushed up against a wall, are remarkably capable of figuring out ingenious new ways to increase production. Now, why do they do that? Why are human beings innovators? Why are they entrepreneurs? Well, it's not because they're so interested in society's well-being. This is the great doctrine of Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations, his great book, he's the founder of modern economics. Well, people actually don't go, as he said, the baker doesn't go to bake his bread simply to feed Paris. He goes out to bake his bread because he thinks he's going to get a profit from it. And when he thinks he gets a profit from it, he works harder at it. And indeed, by doing so, he ends up inadvertently feeding Paris. It's a common grace to those of us who understand the Christian worldview. It's a common grace that sinful men are able to operate in this way, and society and civilization is able to carry on without a problem. And so it is with all things, including food production in general. If there's a profit opportunity to make food more abundant, like, for instance, by producing better machinery for harvesting food, better pesticides for making sure the food doesn't get destroyed by pests, or different kinds of seeds through different engineering process. I think the corn that we have now is far different than the corn they had 400 years ago. I could be wrong about that, but I think it's probably true. Higher yields, better tasting, better quality foods are always an incentive, have been happening for years, and there's always an incentive for entrepreneurs to continue to make more of this kind of stuff, more inroads, because, frankly, they get more money for it. Amazing thing. So that's why human beings innovate, and that's why if we had more people and there wasn't enough food at the time somebody would enter the market. Well, what would be his signal to enter the market? How would this entrepreneur or innovator know to enter the market to produce more food? Well, he would know so because the price would rise. Can you imagine what would happen if you just added an extra billion people in the world and the food supply was exactly the same? Well, if food becomes scarce and the supply of food would start to would be relatively low, demand would be rising for food, and because of that, in a supply and demand equation, you'd have the price rise. Anytime demand is outstripping supply more and more, you're ending up having an increase in price. As soon as that price increases, people are thinking to themselves, well, last year I only got, $1.50 or whatever it is a bushel for corn. Now I get $3 a bushel. I can enter the market and just, grow some crops here on my farm that way I wasn't going to use and make a little extra cash. As soon as that price would hit $5 a yard, all of us who have lawns would start digging them up. We'd be planting corn in our front yard, even to the chagrin of our wives, who might not like corn stalks in the front yard. When they saw the dollars rolling in from the corn production, they'd be probably pretty content to let us do it for a bit. We can always put a lawn back in later, honey. Well, the idea is, as soon as there's a profit incentive and a motive for moving in to the market like that, people are going to absolutely do it. And so, indeed, we have, as we see, the incentive for entrepreneurs and innovators to move in, provide for our needs, just based solely on their self-interest. Isn't that a miracle of economics, in a sense, if you want to call it a miracle? God created the world knowing that man would fall into sin, and gave man, I don't know if it was before or after the fall of man that he did this, but gave man an incentive, a selfish incentive to provide for his own needs, a self-interested motive to go and maximize his own productivity. And by so maximizing his own productivity, was able to benefit other people around him. It's odd, it's a real oddity, and a kind of, as I say, a miracle of capitalism, that people who focus on their self-interest end up benefiting other people. That's a tremendous thing, and it's one of the fundamental premises of economic theory. People focusing on doing their own thing and making their own money end up giving you the goods and services that you want. That's economics. That's a fundamental, if not the fundamental premise of economic theory. And just think of that. Selfish, even if people are selfish and just acting out of pure selfishness without any regard to other people, they still end up benefiting others when they go to work and start producing something that they have a comparative advantage in. It's tremendous. It's a great great ideal. Love to think about it because, and Christians should love to think about this. Christians, unfortunately, are woefully ignorant of economic theory. They don't understand the very basic principles of economics and how the society works. Well, here's one thing they need to get a grasp on then, why people are willing to go to work on a self-interested basis and still benefit society. Adam Smith, Wealth of Nations, 1776 is when it was published. We have a couple of emails sent by interested listeners to questions at policyofliberty.net. And by the way, if you want to call the show this morning, it's 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. Not sure I'm going to be able to get there to answer your phone calls, but I'll try. It's hard being in the studio flying solo as it is, but we'll make my best effort at doing so. We have also a way you can email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. Well, here, Rome, Georgia, this came off the Associated Press April 11th, a high school is looking for a few good snitches. Using revenue from his candy and soda sales, Model High School plans to pay up to $100 for information about thefts and drug or gun possession on campus. It's not that we feel there are any problems here, said Principal Glenn White. Well, come on, Principal Glenn White. You do think there's problems there. That's why you're willing to pay out the big bucks. Don't give us that kind of line. It's a proactive move for getting information that will help deter any sort of illegal activity. Tell you what should be the biggest illegal activity, it's government schooling. At any rate, that's an aside. Under the new policy, a student would receive $10 for information about a theft on campus, $25 or $50 for information about drug possession, and $100 for information about gun possession or other serious felonies. Wonder what that was, other serious ones would be. Isn't it interesting that they have different pricing structure here, that apparently they have a far more expectation or greater expectation that drugs and certainly theft would occur on campus, and that's why they're only willing to pay $10 or $25 or $50 for those. They don't think it's quite as likely that somebody would bring a gun or do some of these other so-called serious felonies. That's why they're only willing to pay out the smaller amount. I wonder where this money comes from to pay. I wonder if it's just tax money or if they're actually ponying up. I can't imagine the principal or the faculty there ponying up cash. Although they might. I mean, you could imagine that if you know you're in danger of being shot going to your job every day because you're a public school teacher. Well, maybe you'd be willing to pony up a little bit of cash to give some reward money out to folks just because you want to save your own life, sort of like a little insurance policy. So it's possible that they're paying for this, but more than likely they're going to try to transfer it to the local taxpayers, extort the money from them, and use it to give these rewards. Informants will receive the reward if they're involved in the informants will not receive the reward if they're involved in the crime. So in other words, if you're sitting there smoking a joint with your friend or something like that, and you turn your friend in to try to get the $25 reward, it's just not going to work. You're not going to get the money. You won't be able to buy extra drugs. That's probably what the people would be thinking, wouldn't they? The public school kids, wow, I can turn in my pal and get some cash, and then I can go out and buy another, you know, whatever they get of pot with the money. I always think things oddly, don't I? At nearby Rome High School, there is no similar program because students there have rapport with officials and are comfortable providing information, said Superintendent Galen Cooper. Ah, so there's a different character of people at the high school, and therefore they're willing to report for free. They don't need any monetary incentives. Isn't it interesting? Just across town, human beings are made up of different stuff. One are willing to report, the other ones are not willing just because of their cultural or socialization that they've received. I wonder if any of them who needed rewards at the junior high school level or at one high school and then go to the other one, adopt that new culture, how long it takes to be inculcated before they've been transformed into the better model student that just works for free for the public good, for the public interest, doesn't need these rewards things. It just doesn't make sense. I mean, why would they? If they're bad in one area, it seems like they'd be bad in another. But this is the typical socialist answer. They don't want to give any Yeah, they just look at man as some sort of mechanistic being that if you just put some certain inputs into him, he'll turn into a better one. If you put some certain bad inputs into him, they'll turn into a different one. It reminds me of that story with B.F. Skinner and his daughter. You know, years ago, I was a PhD in psychology, and he decided that human beings were only bad and only did bad things because of their culture and because of the socialization they received. So I believe, as the story goes, he raised his daughter in a glass cage, wouldn't let her out for years of this cage. He'd go in there occasionally and touch her and speak to her. And I mean, can you imagine being this guy's daughter? What a thug, a sadistic, evil man. And yet he was not charged with child abuse because he had a PhD and he was doing a science experiment with his daughter, apparently. But as soon as the daughter was let out when she was age 18, she turned into the most vile, wicked woman with drug abuse, sexual promiscuity, and all sorts of things like that. And anyone had, you know, far worse than anybody else. And it just shows that the Christian worldview is right, that the evil does not come from inculcation or the influences of culture, not merely from that. What it comes from is the heart. Our hearts are fallen because we have the blood of Adam and Eve in our veins. We are fallen creatures, and we do things that are wrong. And we continue to do those things, whether or not we're isolated from the culture. So the fact that B.F. Skinner, this great psychologist, so-called great psychologist, was able to isolate his daughter, we have the exact expected result from an evil heart. And that's precisely what we saw there. At any rate, getting back to Brad's little submission this morning about the Citizen Spy High School to pay student informants for tips on campus crime. The idea for the program came from Kell High School in Marietta, an Atlanta suburb. The student tips earlier this year led to the arrest of a classmate who had brought a handgun to school. No model high school students have received the award yet, but some question the logic behind it. Jamie Paris, a senior, said that most students already would tell faculty about anything that threatened student safety. But if it's not going to hurt people, I don't think many are going to tell on their friends, she said. That's interesting. So they're not, the cost, the benefit to them is so small, they're not going to do it if they don't think it's going to hurt anybody. So as long as the kid is convinced that no one's going to be hurt by it, it won't be a problem. Now, this issue of handguns, in my opinion, in schools, have you thought about that at all? I mean, why wouldn't we want kids to be armed in schools? Well, on the one hand, you can say, well, kids are immature, they may not handle the weapon correctly, they may not be trained well to handle the weapon. That is certainly the case, certainly true. But if you had your kid in one of these, and you shouldn't, it's sinful to send your kids to a public school or a government indoctrination center for various reasons, but say your kid was there, and there's a frequent threat of some idiot coming in there, some kid who's been trained like that guy in Minnesota in the neo-Nazi world that just wants to go out and slaughter a few people. Let's say that you live in that sort of an environment. Wouldn't you want your own child to be armed? I knew a guy back in the 70s who went to school in Oakland. It was a rough part of town, and he was constantly being berated and accosted by folks. And finally, his dad, who was a police officer in the city of Oakland, gave the kid a gun. Said, if they ever accost you again, pull out the gun and shoot him. And he did. He didn't actually shoot him, apparently. He pulled out the gun, and they ran off. He was ready to use it, ready to pull the trigger and blast these thugs at school who were bugging him. Well, if every student were armed on campus, and it was known that at least most students were armed, you would have a very polite situation there, wouldn't you? I mean, you might have some kids that go nuts, which would be the real problem, that are immature and don't know how to handle their gun, and then he'd end up getting shot by a bunch of other students. But it would make you think a whole lot. It would make you think twice, to say the least, if everybody was armed there before you'd pull out a gun and start doing something nutty. Any rate, interesting thought. I don't think children should be just given handguns because they're not, and with free rein on them, because they just don't know their power sometimes, especially those who are not trained. We can't really trust other people's kids to be trained with these things. It really is a moot point, because Christians have no business having their children in a public school at any rate. It's just a wrong place for them to be, as we've talked about many times on the show. Anyway, Brad also sent in another comment to Policy of Liberty, our questions at policyofliberty.net. 304 U.S. soldiers ordered killed by Pentagon in Iraq. Tehran, about 300 recalcitrant U.S. soldiers have been killed by the Pentagon's special team, intelligence sources in Iraq have revealed. The sources quoted high-ranking U.S. officers as saying that since the U.S. occupation of Iraq in March 2003, more than 304 U.S. military forces have been executed in spurious clashes, that means false clashes, at the behest of Army commanders and with the knowledge of the Pentagon. The bodies of these soldiers have been sent to their families and announced as forces who had been killed in the fight against terrorists, the Mail News Agency correspondent in southern Iran has learned. The soldiers ordered killed were mainly among those who suffered mental disorders and protested against the massacre of Iraqi civilians and asked, who were they fighting for? Reports say the numbers of soldiers who have injured or maimed themselves to flee the scene of war in Iraq are on the rise, and new revelations show that this number has exceeded 2,100 over the past 2 years. The U.S. Army's medical dispensary announced 4 months ago that more than 6,000 soldiers serving in Iraq suffer from severe mental problems. The reports have also revealed that some of these soldiers tend to kill innocent Iraqi civilians without any particular reason in order to reduce their mental pain. Wow, this is a shocking story. It comes out of the Tehran Times. We may not know if this is true or not, but frankly, folks, if you've ever been out of the country and watched the news, you get a very different perspective, especially if you're in a country where they don't speak English. Because all the news that comes into them from the United States has to be translated, and obviously you can't translate everything, so only certain things are translated. That's interesting in and of itself. I remember when I lived in Chile, people didn't know anything about Bill Clinton. I was at a few glorious reports about it. They had no idea about his nefarious activities and his little indulgences and things that he should not be indulging in. They had no idea that that stuff was going on. They had no idea that he believed in partial birth abortion. There were all sorts of things that they were ignorant about. But I remember when news events would even happen there, and I'd be out of the country, out of Chile, and for instance, I was in New Zealand once and watching the news, and the cameramen were talking about a huge riot down in Santiago. It looked terrible, just people with staves and, you know, little car burnings and all sorts of radical things going on. Well, immediately got on the phone and called back, and the kids were there, and I said, well, what's going on? I mean, are you guys all right? And they're like, Dad, this is just a day like any other. What are you talking about? And as it turns out, the liberals had cornered, the Marxists down there had cornered about 50 or 75 radicals, dressed them up, and they started parading around and causing a little bit of havoc in one section of town, relatively quietly. There might have been some car burned or turned over or something like that, you know, sadly, as these guys love to destroy property. But, of course, the news media focused on it and made it sound like it was a huge event. They just made it seem far greater than it was. The vast majority of people in the town were unaffected by this nonsense and this charade, and they continued on their daily lives. Yet the news media chose to give that story as if it was something terrifying and going on there in Santiago. Well, believe it or not, the American news media does the same thing, and sometimes it is of great interest to us to get a different perspective. We don't always know what's going on in Iraq or anywhere else in the world just by trusting Fox News or even the BBC in England. I mean, these people will tend to put a slant on the story, not report things, under-report things, over-report things, and in other ways twist the truth so that you don't always know what's going on in these areas. And so I appreciate listening to these alternative news sources, for instance, this Tehran Times. Not that I'm saying we can trust it infallibly either, but why would I trust it any less than Fox News? Has Fox News shown itself to be some vicar of truth in the world or some herald of righteousness and unfailing accuracy in reporting all the facts and all the details? No, on the contrary, they tend to work against those things, those ideals of truth. I remember even during the last election how hard it is. They make it so difficult for third party candidates to be heard. I just feel, I may be wrong about this, that many Americans who could, if they could just hear either Michael Badnarik or Michael Peruka speaking, or the vice presidential candidate speaking, would have chosen to vote otherwise than they did for the two goons, Bush or Kerry. It's just no doubt in my mind. I guess I can't really know this, but I just have this feeling, for whatever that's worth, that a lot of people would say, hey, I really like what that guy's saying better. Maybe there'll be enough people to rally around him, and I'm going to vote for principle, rather than just be pragmatic and say that George Bush is better than John Kerry. which of course is proven to be not the case. He gives a lot of lip service and makes you feel good about the fact that he's, you know, cutting out your heart while he's stabbing you with a knife. Oh, it won't. It'll be good. Just don't worry about it. I'm a good guy, and I would never kill you, and I would never hurt you. And you know, and then he's just taking your heart out while he's telling you all these nice things. Well, there's a George Bush for you. Well, here, you know, why? What about these third party candidates? They would have been able to have a much greater voice if the media had not said you cannot participate in the debates unless you have 15% of the voters in polls willing to support you. Well. The only way you get heard is by, you know, and get the numbers up in the polls by going to the debates. And by the media forcing them out, essentially they controlled the election to go one of two ways, towards the Democrats or the Republicans. They have these all sorts of lame defenses for why that's not necessary for them to do. But I'm sure it would be a popular event if you could just get some third-party candidates up there. And have some people. I'm not sure some people would watch. I know of people that never heard of third party candidates that would be willing to do so. Yet the media has distorted the news. Well, as you can tell, we have not gone to any breaks here at Christian Worldview this morning. It's mainly because trying to fly solo here is not that easy to do. If you're just tuning in, I would let you know that the weather outside is 48 degrees in Greenville. It's going to get up to about 59 degrees as a high today. That's about it. Look for scattered thunderstorms. Now, there is a special weather alert that's out about for this scattered thunderstorms, talking about nickel-size hail or greater in certain parts of the area. Yesterday, I understand there was a tornado in Abbeville, which is just a little bit, of course, south and west, I suppose, of Greenville, in a flatter area. But so you can be aware of that. You're supposed to have high winds again today, and there could be some significant wind damage. So beware of, as you're going out today, that there could be some bad weather, and it's not going to be a whole lot of warmth today. So make sure you have your coat ready as you begin to head out the door for work this morning. Well, I think what we're going to try to do is I'm going to try to walk over here and put on our mid-morning break, since we've missed all the other ones so far, and see if you can bear with me for a minute, folks, while we try to, again, fly solo and make this thing happen. Well, it doesn't look like that's going to be working anytime soon here, but we'll see if we can't make it work here.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media. Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
A wise and frugal government, which shall restrain men from injuring one another, which shall leave them otherwise free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement, and shall not take from the mouth of labor the bread it has earned. This is the sum of good government. Thomas Jefferson, in his first presidential inaugural address, 1801.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your captain speaking. We want to thank you for flying TRN Airways. Now, if you'll just look out of your left side window, you can see the dense clouds of liberal lunacy commonly polluting the airwaves. On the right side, you can see clear skies full of common sense, liberty-minded conversation. Now, as we enter the Christian Worldview airspace, we'll be experiencing clear-headed thinking and will soon be reaching logical conclusions. Feel free to recline your seat and enjoy the remainder of the flight. And thank you for flying TRN Airways.
As nations cannot be rewarded or punished in the next world, they must be so in this. By an inevitable chain of causes and effects, Providence punishes national sins by national calamities. George Mason.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
The people never give up their liberties, but under some delusion. Edmund Burke.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN, and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NP Pros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS, as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals, that's npros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
In Common Sense, Thomas Paine writes, "Could we take off the dark covering of antiquity pertaining to the origin of kings and of the state and trace them to their first rise, we should find the first of them nothing better than the principal ruffian of some restless gang, whose savage manners or preeminence subtly obtained him the title of chief among plunderers, and who by increasing in power and extending his depredations overawed the quiet and defenseless to purchase their safety by frequent contributions."
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Well, we're trying to provide some reference for your brain this morning. If we can ever get back on the air, apologize for that, folks, having some difficulties here, trying to run the studio at the same time we're talking into the microphone. At any rate, what else can you say when you got a volunteer staff? We're just thankful we have them all, and we hope that that they indeed will continue to provide the great service they've been able to do for us in the past. At any rate, we have a couple of other announcements I wanted to get on the air this morning, if I possibly can here. The Lee Ott, who is the chairman of the Greenville County Libertarian Party and Upstate Libertarian Society, I wanted to announce that he has a business meeting this morning. This is a reminder about this month's business meeting of the Greenville County Libertarian Party and Upstate Libertarian Society on Thursday, April 16th from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. It's being held at the Prime Sirloin on Woodruff Road in Greenville, South Carolina. Lee says, "I hope you can make it. Be sure to invite your friends, relatives, and neighbors. Thanks. Lee Ott, chairman of the Greenville County Libertarian Society." Again, that's 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Thursday, April 16th, being held at the Prime Sirloin on Woodruff Road in Greenville. Be sure to make it, if you can, to that particular meeting. Also have a couple of other announcements we want to make for let you know about. First of all, we have Confederate Memorial Day Coming up, Confederate Memorial Day is going to be held Saturday, April 30th at 2 p.m. at Clinton Square in Clinton, South Carolina. For information and details, call James DeShields after 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. Lawrence County, in Lawrence County, it's from 864-969-5029. That's 864-969-5029, if you can possibly make it out to that meeting. There's also, it may interest you to know, there's a politically incorrect, uncensored monthly newspaper that sometimes publishes the tyranny response unit's writing. It's called The First Freedom. And a supporter of this show, Nelson Waller, offers any of our listeners a free postpaid sample copy of it. Call Nelson at 864-642-4315 if interested. You can also sample this fine paper's material at www.gulftel.com/First Freedom. It picks up where the liberal media leave off. Again, call Nelson at 864-642-4315. Apparently, I got a note from Nelson the other day thanking me for reading the ad on the air, and he said that several people have already subscribed to the paper, and we're glad to hear that you've done so. Another important announcement is the Institute on the Constitution. Pastor Tony Romo, who sometimes substitutes for the show, will be hosting the Institute on the Constitution. He says you can call him at 269-864 area code 269-1443 for information or to register. You're cordially invited to join friends and neighbors for a wonderful opportunity to learn about American history, the underlying biblical principles on which our government is based, and the history of the drafting and ratification of the Constitution of the United States. Classes will begin on April 11th and continue every Monday evening for 12 weeks, starting at 6:30 p.m. until 8 p.m. Each class will feature an informative 30-minute video lecture by constitutional attorney and professor Dr. John Eidsmo of Faulkner University. Don't miss this opportunity to learn how America can recover its lost freedoms and the legacy of liberty our founding fathers fought to preserve. Again, you can call Pastor Tony Romo at 269-1443 in the 864 area code. That's 269-1443 for information or to register. It's going to be a great event as it continues to go on. Before you get there, be sure to go to the homepage of policyofliberty.net and scroll down to the section entitled Liberty Minutes Programs. The Liberty Minutes Program will have one of the options there in the Liberty Minutes Program will be to listen to 46 minutes and 20 seconds on Christian views of resistance and rebellion, a reading essentially of some articles I've done for the Times Examiner and the Free Market News and so forth. This will highlight the features and aspects of the American War for Independence and how this affects the Christian worldview. We'd encourage you to listen to that broadcast by scrolling down on policyofliberty.net, the homepage, going to the section where it talks about Liberty Minutes and finding that 46-minute track. Listen to that before you go to the Institute on the Constitution, or listen to it every week if you need to. So some people tell it it's a little bit, it's a lot of good stuff, but it's hard to digest it all in one sitting. You might have to listen to it two or three times, or listen to it once a week for a few weeks to help you get into the right frame of mind for thinking about the issues that are so important for the Christian worldview. I'd like to thank you also for supporting us at the Times Examiner. The Times Examiner is a great weekly paper that has columns, just tremendous columns from different people, including me, other local favorites like Ben Graydon, and we have a number of other favorites from around across the country that are there, including Walter Williams and Thomas Sowell, Joe Sober and Phyllis Schlafly, Pat Buchanan. All of these columns appear weekly in the Times Examiner, and you'll be able to pick up a copy of the Times Examiner for just $25 a year. They'll deliver it to your house every week for that price, $27 if you're out of state. Christian Exodus people, take note. You should be getting this paper. Call Bob Dill at 864-268-0576. That's 864-268-0576. Or simply stop by 44 Pine Knoll Drive in Greenville and pick up your own copy. You'll be glad that you did. Well, you're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We're glad that you've joined us this morning. We have a caller on the line, I believe, and we now have some production staff here to help me out, and we do appreciate that. We'd like to welcome you to the show. This is Dr. John Coben. Who am I speaking with? Hello, have we lost you? Well, it looks like we may have lost our caller. No, I look at, well, if we've lost you and you're listening to the show, please call back. We need to make sure that We got all our technical snafus worked out here this morning, folks. Sorry about that if we accidentally dropped the call. I don't know that we did. It may be that you were calling on a cell phone. Please go ahead and call back. We'll get you right on the air. Okay, we have a few other announcements going on this morning. We should probably get pretty close to our going back to our normal break schedule. In fact, I'm going to read a quick story, and then we're going to go back and take a break and try to get back to some normalcy here this morning on Christian Worldview. Appreciate you joining us. Again, if you want to call the show, 864-201-6955, or you can send an email 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to questions@policyofliberty.net. We have Cheryl Thompson writing for the Washington Post saying, poor performance records are easily outdistanced. Gwen Vives was excited about becoming the mother for the first time at age 36. She shopped for baby outfits, attended birthing classes, and painted moons and stars on the nursery ceiling for the infant she and her husband would name Alex. But 3 hours after giving birth to a healthy boy in 2001, Vives, a scientist in Los Alamos National Laboratory, New Mexico, suffered a complication and bled to death. It was 4 days before Christmas. Her husband, Ted, wouldn't learn until later the doctor who tended to his wife that day in Los Alamos Medical Center had a troubled history. Obstetrician and gynecologist Pamela Johnson had been forced to leave a previous job at Duke University Medical Center in North Carolina when questions arose about her surgical skills and her complication rate from medical procedures. Later, Johnson lied to get her New Mexico license, saying she had never lost hospital privileges, according to an order of the New Mexico Medical Board. After Vivas died, Johnson again lied about her past. Claiming that she had never lost her hospital privileges, Johnson was given a license to practice in Michigan even before New Mexico could discipline her. Hundreds of other doctors across the country have done the same. Facing the problems in one state, they simply moved and restarted their careers. They were able to do so despite a federally imposed tracking system designed to prevent just that. Nationally, 972 positions during the period of 1999 to 2004 were disciplined in one state, then moved at least once or more and were disciplined again for a separate infraction. There's also something called a National Practitioner Data Bank. The aim of the bank is to allow licensing boards and employers to check doctors' records before they're hired to prevent the problem from the state hopping problem. But nearly 54% of all hospitals have never reported disciplinary action to the data bank, according to the Federal Department of Health and Human Services, which oversees the system. So interestingly enough, we have a failure to some extent in people having problems with physicians who are incompetent and should have their licenses yanked. But the state, of course, which grants the licenses, is incapable of truly monitoring effectively these doctors' activities. Now, some people say, well, these are just exceptions to the rule. Well, there's always going to be exceptions to the rule. The question I have is, does the state do this monitoring better than the market does? The market should be monitoring it as much as possible, if not entirely, any kind of quality grading or certification services, because the state is always going to be subjective to perverse incentives, to bureaucratic inefficiencies and sluggishness, as well as the politicizing of the whole process, where people who are in favor with politicians are going to go ahead and get licenses and privileges that they might not otherwise be able to obtain from their reputation in the market system. So interesting to read about this. From those of us with a Christian worldview, need to know that God, the way God ordained the world, markets, free markets, are the best way to combat and organize or combat social evils and organize society. Not socialism, not government intervention, not this kind of regulation which we're reading about here. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be right back.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media. Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
A wise and frugal government, which shall restrain men from injuring one another, which shall leave them otherwise free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement, and shall not take from the mouth of labor the bread it has earned. This is the sum of good government. Thomas Jefferson, in his first presidential inaugural address, 1801.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your captain speaking. We want to thank you for flying TRN Airways. Now, if you'll just look out of your left side window, you can see the dense clouds of liberal lunacy commonly polluting the airwaves. On the right side, you can see clear skies full of common sense, liberty-minded conversation. Now, as we enter the Christian worldview airspace, we'll be experiencing clear-headed thinking and will soon be reaching logical conclusions. Feel free to recline your seat and enjoy the remainder of the flight. And thank you for flying TRN Airways.
As nations cannot be rewarded or punished in the next world, they must be so in this. By an inevitable chain of causes and effects, Providence punishes national sins by national calamities. George Mason.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we're trying to do that exactly that here at Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben today. Something that appeared on LouRockwell.com, which our illustrious research staff found for us. LouRockwell.com is a great site, by the way. If you haven't visited there, do so, because you have great columns, all sorts of interesting stuff being published there. This one is entitled Taxpayer-Financed Sports Stadiums, Deals Benefit Teams, or These Deals Benefit Teams, Not the Public. One of Mayor Oscar Goodman's pet project is to bring a Major League Baseball team to Las Vegas. At a recent breakfast presentation, the mayor promised he would be throwing out the first pitch by the 2008 season. In Goodman's mind, Las Vegas will never be a Major League city until it has a Major League team. I've made it clear that we want baseball in Las Vegas, and I'm ready to wheel and deal, Goodman told the Miami Herald. Goodman may want baseball, but there's no citizen outcry over such a team. And when Goodman says wheel and deal, he's not talking about his money. He's talking about taxpayers' money. Reportedly, Goodman has worked on a financing plan, but nobody knows the details. The mayor only says the plan would make everyone happy. But Major League Baseball owners go where the taxpayer money is. And if governments aren't generous, they use easier figures like Goodman to leverage it, or eager figures like Goodman to leverage it, as is the case with the Florida Marlins. Skipping down, government officials regularly pitch the line that the economy benefits when local and state governments spend millions in taxpayer dollars to build stadiums and lure teams. The government then rents the facility to ultra-rich franchise owners for next to nothing. Time and again, this economic development argument has proven to be a swing and a miss. And in fact, there was an article written, he says, here by Dennis Coates and Brad Humphries in a briefing paper for the Cato Institute. Its title was Caught Stealing, Debunking the Economic Case for D.C. Baseball. There are net benefits or zeros, what economists have found. There really is no benefit of bringing a Major League stadium in and a Major League team. After analyzing 37 metropolitan area economies boasting professional and sports franchises, Coates and Humphreys came to the following conclusions. No positive impact was seen in the growth rate of per capita incomes, but pro teams has statistically negative impact on levels of real per capita income. Real and service sectors were negatively affected, with the average net job loss in those sectors being 1,924 jobs. Hotel wages tended to increase $10 yearly with the presence of pro sports, but restaurant and bar wages went down by $162 per year. Skipping down a little further in their article, one more thing. Like all other big public works projects, stadium projects have a history of being boondoggles with massive cost overruns. Camden Yards in Baltimore was 40% over budget when Yankee Stadium was renovated in the 1970s. Almost four times more New York City taxpayer money was spent than owner George Steinbrenner originally promised. No taxpayer money was needed to construct to the Las Vegas Motor Speedway or the arenas and various casinos. Funding to build a baseball stadium should be no different. Interesting article, and it is important for us who cherish the Christian worldview to recognize that there are problems anytime public policy or government agents want to get involved and spend taxpayer money on doing a proactive policy or to do a policy of inefficient provision. If the market can do it, then why should taxpayers be looted? People that have no interest in baseball, for instance, should not be looted to create a stadium.
And this is the whole point. And not only that, it's not real clear that there are great benefits from having major league teams in particular towns. So it's a very dubious process. Those of us who are Christians should be instead supporting free markets, because the free market is the best way to provide the most efficient way to please consumers and provide for our quality of life, rather than relying on the state to come up with all sorts of these phony plans that only pad their own pockets and increase their own power. Beware of that kind of stuff going on. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in just a minute.
You're listening to TRN.
Public schools will never excel because they lack intellectual capital and have to compensate for too many social problems. Daniel Golden.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Life, liberty, and property do not exist because men have made laws. On the contrary, it was the fact that life, liberty, and property existed beforehand that caused men to make laws in the first place. Frederick Bastiat.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of 6 homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back into Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We have 49 degrees here in Greenville, going to get up to only 59 degrees today. Expect scattered thunderstorms all day, at least a 40% chance of scattered thunderstorms. And you're going to have the possibility of nickel-sized hail as well as some pretty high winds. So as you're making your way out to work, beware of that. Those facts. A little bit cool on the cool side for this late in spring for us here in South Carolina. But weather is what the weather is. So at any rate, be prepared for that if you're making your way out to work this morning. A couple of announcements to make. I mentioned these a little earlier on the show. I want to mention them again. Lee Ott, from the chairman of the Libertarian Party, Greenville County, and Upstate Libertarian Society, has having a business meeting. He says this is a reminder about this month's business meeting of the Greenville County Libertarian Party and the Upstate Libertarian Society on Thursday, April 16th, from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. It's being held at the Prime Sirloin on Woodruff Road in Greenville, South Carolina. I hope you can make it, he says. Be sure to invite your friends, relatives, and neighbors. That's, again, 6:30 to 8 o'clock tomorrow night at the Prime Sirloin on Woodruff Road in Greenville, South Carolina. Hope you can make it. Good group of folks.
to get to know here in the upstate. Also want to make note of the Institute on the Constitution. It's being held by South Point Baptist Church, and South Point Baptist Church is pastored by Pastor Tony Romo. You're cordially invited to join friends and neighbors for a wonderful opportunity to learn about American history and the underlying biblical principles on which our government is based, and the history of the drafting and ratification of the Constitution of the United States. Classes began last Monday and will continue for the next 11 weeks, starting at 6:30 Monday night. You can call Pastor Tony Romo at 864-269-1443. That's 864-269-1443. Be sure to attend if you can. Before you go, make sure you listen to the Liberty Minutes program, which is can be accessed by clicking the link under Liberty Minutes on policyofliberty.net, our homepage. That's a 46-minute presentation where I'm reading some articles on the Christian views on resistance and rebellions and some lessons from the war from American for American independence. Be sure to listen to that before you go, if you can, over the weekend, before you go to the Institute on the Constitution. Pastor Tony Roman, by the way, will be hosting the show this Friday. I will be out of town on some other business, and Pastor Tony Roman has graciously told us he would be willing to sit in and do the show for us. And he will be interviewing a man named Frank Janoski. And Frank Janoski is a member of Christian Exodus. They want to find out. We wanted to find out from Frank all the great details about the Christian Exodus movement, what's happening here in South Carolina right now, and to let local folks be apprised of this move to South Carolina. 2,500 families are going to be coming to South Carolina, 2,000 to Greenville County, who are very politically actively minded. Who are people who would support very vigorously the Christian Worldview Program and the Tyranny Response Network. We're glad to have them coming into town, and we look forward to hearing from Frank as Pastor Tony Romo has an opportunity to quiz him on certain things going on with the Christian Exodus movement. So stay tuned for that. Tomorrow morning we have another very exciting guest, Pastor Chuck Baldwin, who is the former vice presidential candidate for the Constitution Party, will be here via telephone on the radio, and we will be interviewing him and talking to him about just whatever's on his mind and whatever we can drum up between us as an interesting conversation for the Christian Worldview Program. So we'll be glad to welcome Chuck Baldwin tomorrow. Hope you'll be able to tune in as well, listen to that show and the show on Friday when we listen to Frank Janoski talking about Christian Exodus. One more announcement before we go on, and that's simply that Confederate Memorial Day is April 30th at 2 p.m. in Clinton Square. That's Clinton, South Carolina. It's sponsored by the Lawrence Breyer Sons of Confederate Veterans Camp. For information or details, please call James DeShields after 6 p.m. Monday through Friday in Lawrence County, 864-969-5029. That's 864-969-5029. Well, a number of quotes that came up I thought were of considerable interest here from folks here at our TRN production staff. One is comes from the Irish Puritans, James Usher and the Reformation of the Church by Crawford Gribben, published by Evangelical Press 2003. He says, "The political union between the three Stuart kingdoms, which Usher, that is James Usher, 1581 to 1656, supported as a loyal subject of his king, was the means by which the Irish Reformed Church was crippled." So here we see some evidence, according to this historian, of a problem that occurred because of the union between the church and the state, which is something we've talked about here a lot on Christian Worldview. So I appreciate our research staff finding that. Another quick quote from R.J. Rush, Jr., now departed famous theonomist of the 20th century, and also, I guess, of the early 20th century. I think he died actually for the 21st century. Excuse me, not 20th, 21st century. He says, "History has never been dominated by majorities, but only by dedicated minorities who stand unconditionally on their faith." Isn't that an interesting observation? History has never been dominated by majorities, only by dedicated minorities who stand unconditionally on their faith. And I suppose that's the rallying cry for all of us who currently stand in the minority, as it was for our founding fathers when they started this great nation. They were in the minority, and only later did they become popular and moved over from being traitors into becoming widely recognized patriots. At any rate, you're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Got a couple of more interesting things to talk about this morning, but we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Mr. Speaker, I want someone on that side of the House to tell me the difference between the bold robber who holds you up on the highway and robs you of your money, and the government that does the bidding of a band of robbers who prescribe the conditions by which you shall come in and surrender your money. I will tell you the difference. One takes his chances and runs the risk of losing his own life in his effort to rob others, while the other gang uses the governmental machinery to hold up and plunder the citizen and, in the name of law, commits his crimes against humanity. Congressman James T. Heflin, Alabama, 1909.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
I would rather be exposed to the inconveniences attending too much liberty than to those attending too small a degree of it. Thomas Jefferson.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And the Tyranny Response Unit, that's me, Dr. John Coben, was just looking at some more quotations sent up by the Tyranny Response Network research staff. This one by Gary North, another famed theonomist, still living, and son-in-law of R.J. Rush, Jr., as I understand it. President Bush got himself a used Lincoln is the title of this article on LouRockwell.com. Interesting to read, talking about Senator Lincoln from Arkansas, discussing the war over in Iraq and bringing the troops home and stuff like that. He says, at best, Congress might have asked for more strict conditions. In other words, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on me again. Fool me a third time, and doggone, shame on me again. I sure wish that man would stop fooling me. Yes, that's the way many Americans must be thinking about George W. Bush. Who's the greater fool, him or them? Well, they keep getting fooled by him. They voted for him again. They'd rather elect him than a third-party candidate for some reason. Sad, but true. We have an article they sent up, too, which is very interesting about the environment. This is from a betterearth.org, alternative approaches to and the environmental concerns. Industry and Ecology, the Exotic Species War by Ronald Bailey. Ronald Bailey's just one of the best authors and editors you can find who writes about the environmentalist movement and debunks their agenda and what they're actually saying. As it's basically not true. They just blow stuff out of proportion, or they invent stuff out of thin air and try to create a scary environment so that people react and respond to them. He says, driving around the Patagonian Andes in December, actually, I just was there myself about the same time, I guess. When were we there? Was it December? No, we were there in September. Anyway, my wife and I were enchanted by the masses of luminous blue lupines and bright yellow scotch broom lining many of the roads. We stopped frequently to take photos of the floral abundance. How insensitive of us. Both, it turns out, are evil foreigners. Lupine is from North America, and scotch broom hails from Europe. Since 1992, the nations of the world have been waging war against such foreign invaders under the Convention on Biological Diversity. He goes on and talks about some of these ridiculous policies out there.
And he says later in the article, in the May 2005 cover article for Discover, senior editor Alan Burdick asks the startling question, are invasive species really so bad? It's not yet available online, but this article concludes, 50 years of invasion biology has failed to identify a clear ecological difference between an ecosystem rich in native species and one chock full of aliens. What about the claim that invasive species pose the single most formidable threat to natural disaster? It certainly is the case that some introduced species have detrimental effects. Think West Nile virus and Norway rats. We should take steps to prevent the introduction of disease organisms and parasites that show high likelihood of harming species that we value. But even the NRDC admits that over the past two centuries, only one in seven of the thousands of introduced species have caused environmental, health, or economic harm. In fact, most such as wheat and cows, have produced people with far more provided people with far more benefits than harms. And while some species are threatened with extinction by the introduction of outside species, most infamously the case of the brown tree snakes that killed off several bird species on the isolated island of Guam, in fact, fewer than 6% of species considered endangered are menaced by non-native species, according to Burdick. Thus, and he talks about rainforests a little bit further down, even in Australia. He said, this new rainforest, less than 150 years old, is an affront to conventional ecological wisdom that species must co-evolve in order to function together. So we found that accidental rainforests, such as ones that are even on the islands in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, actually do fairly well. Ascension's rainforest is evidence that nature is super resilient. Ultimately, the battle, says Ronald Bailey, against exotic species is a cultural and aesthetic war, not one compelled by scientific evidence, as is all of the environmental movement. It's a battle that's driven by aesthetics and cultural norms. It's not compelled by scientific evidence. And a lot of times it's just full of foolhardiness and ignorance as people go about parading their scare tactics and so forth about environmental disaster. At any rate, appreciate the research staff finding that. Also, we have some food for discussion, a book review, and this is from Sir Fred Catherwood, who wrote a book, and the book's entitled The Creation of Wealth, Recovering a Christian Understanding of Money, Work, and Ethics. This is the son-in-law of Dr. Martin Lloyd-Jones, who was also involved in the InterVarsity and served as the president of the British Evangelical Alliance, was quite a successful person as a chief executive officer and businessman as well. And this this review is done by Brian Snapp on February 1st. He says the following, this I think is a very interesting article, or could be a very interesting book. Writing in the context of the global economy has multifaceted experience in Parliament, and as CEO and the author Fred Catherwood shows, the need for benefits of applying Christian principles in the marketplace. Catherwood devotes the chapter to each of such subjects as work, wealth, fair trading, the global economy, and the electronic economy. Although technology has changed the business sector globally, he argues that bedrock Christian principles such as strong work ethic, truth, trust, and compassionate concern for others remain at the core of good business practice. He provides concrete examples from his own experience regarding the positive rewards and natural consequences of such practices. It is encouraging to read of Christians who have brought biblical thinking into the high echelons of business organization as well as civil government. Very often there is a false dichotomy that Christianity is for private life and not intended for the work arena. He uses examples of the sound business practices of the Huguenots as well as the impact of Christian business in other economies to illustrate the historic role that Christianity has played in the past. He challenges the church to become more involved in aiding the impoverished and moral instruction in ministering to single mothers. Along with his interesting, his stressing his strong church presence in ethical training and mercy ministries, he also points out the importance of strong government in regard to aiding the poor. He is supportive of civil government's programs for health care and employment, even through higher taxation. I personally have many questions regarding the government involvement in these areas. However, if Christians do seek to minister to the needy, we can expect the government to be become heavily involved. If Christians do not seek to minister to the needy, we can expect the government to become heavily involved. When he writes of government having a major economic goal of full employment, he does not deal with the fact that not everyone wants to work. The problem is not always that there are not good jobs available. This is an excellent article. It's just one more line at the bottom, skipping down. Although I would see a more limited government involvement than Catherine does, his volume is insightful. Appreciate that comment. The people in Europe just naturally, like Canadians, they just naturally think that government should have a role where it ought not to have a role. It's just too bad. It shows their cultural dynamics have been afflicted and cursed by their socialist system of generations. And here in America, we still have some folks like me and others who realize that the free market is the best way to organize society, and that with these ideas of having government intervention to solve problems is simply preposterous. Well, at any rate, we appreciate the book review that was done, and for encouraging those and our listeners today to think about how Christians could be more effective in the workplace and looking at their job as part of the work that God's given them to do in the world, and have a corresponding influence by their kind and generous actions. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be right back.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
A wise and frugal government, which shall restrain men from injuring one another, which shall leave them otherwise free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement, and shall not take from the mouth of labor the bread it has earned. This is the sum of good government. Thomas Jefferson, in his first presidential inaugural address, 1801.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is your captain speaking. We want to thank you for flying TRN Airways. Now, if you'll just look out of your left side window, you can see the dense clouds of liberal lunacy commonly polluting the airwaves. On the right side, you can see clear skies full of common sense, liberty-minded conversation. Now, as we enter the Christian worldview airspace, we'll be experiencing clear-headed thinking and will soon be reaching logical conclusions. Feel free to recline your seat and enjoy the remainder of the flight. And thank you for flying TRN Airways.
As nations cannot be rewarded or punished in the next world, they must be so in this. By an inevitable chain of causes and effects, Providence punishes national sins by national calamities. George Mason.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net, that's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9. You may also email your questions and comments 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And a regular listener of Christian Worldview emailed me an article called Libertarian Vacuity, A Failure to Perceive Reality by Al Cronkite, very critical of libertarianism, I think, as I recall, and I'm going to read it here on the air and make a couple comments if I can. I think it's an interesting thing to consider here on Christian Worldview. Yes, we don't do like the modern media does and only read things that are agreeable to us. We even read things which are disagreeable and talk about them. Why? Because we're thinking people. We don't think that we have all the answers necessarily, but we think through all the problems of the world, and we're able to come up with often with a good cogent response, a good answer based on the principles of God's word, and always true to form with the founding principles of this great country: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, the thesis of our founding fathers. He says, is there something magical about markets? Will free markets automatically solve all the world's problems and create a utopian prosperity in all society? Libertarians seem to think so. Now I'm going to stop right there and pause and comment and say this is simply false. What he just said. We do believe that free markets, and I, as a pro-life libertarian, will stand in the gap for the folks and say this much. We do believe that free markets are better than government intervention, but in no way believe that all the world's problems will be solved by markets. I don't know any libertarian who's ever said such a thing, and it's actually absolutely naive to believe that there will not be snake oil salesmen or there won't be failures out there under a purely capitalistic free market system. Well, we simply believe that it's the best thing that you can possibly have in the world, that government intervention is far worse. That's a far cry from saying that what this Cronkite fellow just said, is there something magical about markets? Will free markets automatically solve all the world's problems and create a utopian prosperity in all society? That's a very different thing. Anyway, I'm going to continue on with what he has to say. From a Christian perspective, reading libertarian rhetoric is invariably conflicting. In an essay entitled "Convicting the Innocent: Welcome to the Prison Nation" on the law on the Lou Rockwell internet page, Dr. William L. Anderson, a professor at Frostburg State University in Maryland and an adjunct scholar at the Ludwig von Mises Institute, after granting that government secularism has become tantamount to a religion, writes, "I prefer a secular state to a theocracy, and I'm not allied to the religious right that seems desperate to have a place on the table at the table in the current political debates. I also have been extremely critical of those religious conservatives who have tried to wed their own brand of Christianity to the state, giving us a very nasty civil religion in which the state has expanded all the same." Sounds like a pretty good quote to this tyranny response unit. At any rate, in this essay, Dr. Anderson correctly laments the high percentage of innocents regularly convicted at our adversarial court system and the reluctance of the adversaries to admit and correct the palpable injustices they have created. He then goes on to tie Christians who support the law to the coalition that distorts justice. At the outset, it must be pointed out that since creeds, which resulted from the theological unions in the Middle Ages, have been abandoned, and Arminian antinomianism, as against the law, I guess, lawlessness, has overtaken the Protestant church, the church has become anarchic, weak, and incoherent. Contemporary Christian theology has a vacuity as large as that of libertarians. One side of their mouth screams for a return to biblical values, while the other side denounces obedience to the law as legalism rescinded by the death of the Savior. Unfortunately, without the law, there is neither right or wrong, and Dr. Anderson is correct in pointing to the one of the conclusions this error has created. However, even conceding this conclusion, most libertarians would have no truck with a Christian ethic, even if it were more cerebral. Libertarianism appears to be based on a faith in the righteousness of complete human freedom. Libertarian Congressman Ron Paul is the most obedient of all the members against of that august body, magnificent body. Since the obedience is at the top of God's list of superlatives, I have great admiration for Congressman Paul and am thoroughly convinced that if only half of Congress would rekindle their honesty and join him in adhering to constitutional mandates, our nation would be healed. Nevertheless, my admiration for Congressman Paul is netted by the realization that he, too, would succumb to the anarchic laws that result from human opinion. God's admiration for Old Testament characters was restricted to those who loved the law. Over and over again in the Psalms and Proverbs speak about loving the law. The law was given to Moses by God and was pronounced the key to peace and prosperity. The first psalm begins with, "Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. And he shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water, that bringeth forth its fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper." Capitalization of the law added to distinguish from what is man's laws. The effete nature of contemporary Christianity is a direct result of the failure to understand that though the Paraclete has granted forgiveness from sin and thereby nullified legal condemnation, God's law is still the only avenue to sustained peace and prosperity. Even through the law no longer condemns us, we are to meditate on it and learn to love it the same way our predecessors were admonished to do. The failure of libertarianism to acknowledge the anarchic nature of human opinion and the moral void of secularism is a crucial systematic flaw. Thus, their opinions carry no more weight than the opinions of other nihilistic intellectuals. And he goes on to talk about a few other points, but basically is saying the same thing. Just don't have time to read the whole article on there. I want to simply remark a couple things here, why this guy is so much in error. Now, he's being true to form as a theonomist, but he simply jumps from the presupposition that the law is a good thing, which we all agree with as Christians. It's a good if it's used lawfully, Paul said. And there is some value in meditating in the law. But it does not necessarily mean that the state, therefore, must be imposing the law of God by the virtue of the sword upon the civil society. This is a mistake, and this is a falsehood, as far as I'm concerned, and it's a presupposition that theonomists make. that there is somehow this cohesive unit, state and church, that has to go forge forth in promoting the kingdom of God. I think that's a false premise. The second thing is he's given a very false premise about libertarianism. Many who are theonomists, such as Gary North, appreciate libertarianism and want to have a free market of in ideas and in the economy. They don't want government regulation and intervention. This theonomist, Cronkite, is far more strict than that. He wants the government, obviously, to impose all sorts of proactive laws taken from the Old Testament or elsewhere in God's Word, and force people to abide by them. Well, I don't agree. If you have some thoughts about that, hope you'll have an opportunity to call the show next week when I'm back on and talking about this subject. Or you can call tomorrow when Chuck Baldwin is here. Be sure to tune in to Christian Worldview tomorrow for a discussion with Chuck Baldwin. And we can talk about theonomy, the difference between theonomy and liberty of conscience and divine right again. Excellent topics to bring up, especially because, obviously, judging from Cronkite's article, it's still alive and well. The debate is still alive and well out there today. We're so glad you joined us today. Sorry about our earlier technical snafus and production problems, folks. We seem to have got it straightened out for today, and hopefully tomorrow will go much better. Thanks again for listening and your support. Until tomorrow, then, God bless you.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Let's consider Christian stewardship in terms of financial planning. Saving, eliminating debt, lessening the burdens that can accompany a serious illness or accident. One of the most important reasons that we acquire life, disability, and long-term care insurance is because we want to love our neighbors as ourselves. After all, what kind of testimony do we give if we actually plan to rely on the charity of others? If we love others, especially our church and family members, we should do careful financial planning. Some Christians have 401k plans that need to be rolled over into a better investment alternative. Still others need to protect their wives and children by purchasing some inexpensive life or health insurance. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service. As an independent financial planning firm with a wide range of products, we're here to help you become a better financial steward. Find out about our many services at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.